He raised more than $6 million in the first 24 hours after he announced he was running for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination. O'Rourke has raised more money than any of the other candidates. This is USA Radio News.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
Recapping one of our top stories of the day, flooding continues in the Midwest with more flooding expected, possibly in parts of Nebraska, come the mid part of this week. Some on the left are saying the flooding in Nebraska, Iowa, and Wisconsin is all due to global warming, while Republican Senator from Nebraska Ben Sasse says this isn't the time to be bringing up global warming.
The if-then connection that a lot of people draw in the midst of a crisis isn't very helpful. We got a whole bunch of people struggling for life and livelihood. We had sandbars in the middle of the Platte River filled with cows. This is in the middle of the plains. Cows from upstream had been washed away, and there people are struggling to rescue these people. So politicizing this in the midst of a controversy isn't the right move. The debate around climate change is important. There's a lot of debate we should be having there, but lots of the folks who are running for political office want to pretend that they have certainty about what the solution is, even when their solutions would often be devastating to the economy. So we should be distinguishing between analysis of big problems, emergency response, and debates about what you do down the road.
The former head of the DNC is hired by Fox News. USA Radio Network's Robin Walensky reports.
Fox News hires Donna Brazile, former chair of the DNC, as a political commentator 2 years after she's fired by CNN for feeding Hillary Clinton questions about debate topics during a 2016 town hall. Her conduct at CNN revealed as part of emails exposed by WikiLeaks.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! And a happy St. Patty's Day to each and one, every one of you. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you for joining us. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is co-host Air Force vet Josh Lang. What's going on, Josh?
Well, since I am part Irish and it is St. Patty's Day weekend, this should make for another award-winning show today, Colonel. By the way, if you're running out of room for all of our show trophies at your house, I have room at mine. Think about it. While I sprinkle a little bit of my Irish luck on the Michigan State Spartans men's basketball team as they make their way through the Big Ten and NCAA tournaments. The Ides of March have passed. Now the madness takes over. But I'm prepared to stay focused on our mission for the next 2 hours. Don't you worry.
Sounds good. Thank you, Josh. We'll hear from Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby as he shares some warrant wisdom about mustaches. And Marine vet Skip Coriel looks pretty sharp. He looks good in a blazer. We had fun last week at all dressed up at the Michigan Association of Broadcasters, didn't we?
Yeah, actually, for a Marine, I clean up pretty good.
I was amazed.
Oh, we had good food there. We had good people. And we took home
the gold.
Oh, yeah, we did.
First place in our category. Again, this is the sixth time in 12 years.
Oh, that's awesome. And we owe it all to our listeners.
That's it. Folks, we appreciate you. Okay, here's what we have for you today. A news and comment by the Colonel. I'm going to discuss the criminal activity of those presently running our Federal Bureau of Investigation. They're a threat to our national security. Author Michael Ames will discuss the book American Cipher. It's about Bo Bergdahl and America in Afghanistan. Then Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel and businessman Jeremy Latcher will discuss drones in the military and civilian use. And we'll learn about Beezy boards and how they can empower hurt and disabled folks, especially veterans.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
Troops, you know how on each show we honor a deceased military person, not the superstars, but the average soldier, sailor, marine, airman, or coastie. They don't have to have served in combat, but do have to have served honorably. Active duty, guard, or reserve. I have some, but I need more. I need several more veterans to honor. How about the way you can nominate someone is to send me about 250 words summarizing his or her service, and I'll read it on the show. Send the information to me, Denny, at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Troops, we do welcome your input to this show. Send me your ideas and comments through our website, or you can do it through frontlinesoffreedom.com or by Facebook. Now it's time for news and comment by the Colonel in Frontlines of Freedom. First the news. What's first, Josh?
NATO's commander said that he needs two more guided missile destroyers based in Europe and additional carrier presence in the North Atlantic to counter a growing maritime threat from Russia. The naval assets are part of a list of requirements Army General Curtis Scaparotti said the 29-nation alliance needs to boost deterrence against aggressive steps taken by Moscow to bolster its own forces. General Scaparotti said, quote, "I'm not comfortable yet with the deterrent posture that we have in Europe in support of our national defense strategy," end quote. Scaparotti doubles as NATO commander and commander of U.S. European Command. The four-star general, who was possibly making his last congressional appearance before retiring after 40 years of service, made his needs known at a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing a week before the Defense Department is expected to outline its fiscal 2020 budget request. General Scap, as he is known, said he has asked for two more Arleigh Burke-class destroyers equipped with the Aegis missile defense system to be based at Naval Station Rota, Spain, in addition to the four already there. Scaparotti also said he would welcome more rotations of aircraft carrier battle groups in the North Atlantic, quote, "to stay ahead of, frankly, the modernization we see in Russia's maritime forces," end quote, particularly in its nuclear submarine fleet.
The general is right in wanting NATO to stay ahead of Russia in quickly deployable forces. However, the U.S. is not the only member of NATO. Perhaps Germany or England should provide one or more of these ships? Hey, it's their nations we're defending.
Speaking of General Scap, at that Senate hearing, he also said that we should block sales of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter to Turkey if it goes ahead with its plan to buy the advanced S-400 anti-air missile system from Russia. Scap said, quote, "My best military advice is that we don't follow through," end quote, on supplying F-35s to NATO ally Turkey unless it backs out of the S-400 deal with Moscow. Further, he has two reasons for objecting to Turkey getting the S-400 system, which Russia has billed as a weapons system to counter the F-35 in its sales pitch to Turkey, Arab states, and China. The general said, quote, "If they accept the S-400 to establish it in Turkey, there is the first issue that it's not interoperable with NATO systems, nor is it interoperable inside our integrated missile defense system," end quote.
While Turkey is officially a NATO member, they're no ally. They are a major threat to the safety of the Syrian Kurdish forces that are doing most of the fighting against ISIS in Syria. Turkey is not trustworthy.
South Korea and the U.S. have formally signed a deal on Seoul's increased payment for the U.S. troop deployment, amid worries about the future of the country's decades-long military alliance. President Trump earlier pressured Seoul to increase its share, triggering concerns in South Korea that he might withdraw some of the 28,500 U.S. troops here if Seoul refused to accept his demand. Experts say Trump will likely again apply pressure when the two countries meet in coming months to determine Seoul's contribution for next year. South Korean Foreign Minister Kang Kyung-hwa and U.S. Ambassador Harry Harris signed the new cost-sharing deal earlier this month. During a signing ceremony, Kang called the deal, quote, "the results of hard work and sometimes difficult work that the alliance can build upon to become stronger and greater," end quote. Harris said the deal's signing underscores the importance of the ironclad nature of our alliance. Earlier, the two countries eliminated their huge springtime military drills and replaced them with smaller training in what they called a bid to back diplomatic efforts to strip North Korea of its nuclear weapons. Trump tweeted that, quote, "The reason I do not want military drills with South Korea is to save hundreds of millions of dollars for the U.S., for which we are not reimbursed," end quote.
It's the right thing for a nation that is economically prosperous to pay for any protection we provide. The same applies to Germany and other NATO nations.
Suspected ISIS members, including foreign fighters, sat in a long line in a field of bright yellow flowers, exhausted and hunched over, as they were questioned and searched earlier this month by U.S.-led coalition members and Kurdish fighters. They were the latest group to surrender from the besieged final pocket of Syrian territory held by the militant group. Unlike previous days when hundreds of families emerged from the ISIS-held village, these evacuees included dozens of fighting-age men, some of them wounded and limping, days after U.S.-backed forces pounded the area. Armed coalition fighters encircled the line of men to screen them, whose heads were bowed to the ground. Separately, Kurdish fighters of the Syria Democratic Forces searched them for weapons and information. The men were separated into three groups: Syrians, Iraqis, and other nationalities. The SDF has besieged this area since September, but the fight has been slowed because of the enormous number of civilians who have surfaced in the tiny shred of territory in eastern Syria. Well over 10,000 have filtered out over recent weeks. The surrender of dozens of men could be a sign that the ISIS fighters inside are starting to wear down. But it's not known how many remain, and SDF officials say they expect there are still hundreds inside vowing to fight. The territorial defeat of ISIS, which once presided over a self-proclaimed Islamic caliphate that straddled huge areas of Iraq and Syria, would be a milestone in the devastating four-year global campaign to crush the group. But ISIS militants have scattered in the vast desert between the two countries, and sleeper cells continue to stage guerrilla-style attacks.
This is great progress, but ISIS is far from being eliminated. We must keep after them. And that's the news. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel, and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk about the deserter Bo Bergdahl and the disaster in Afghanistan. At East Troops, take a break.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your home defense tip of the week. One item you should keep in your bedroom at all times is a military-grade high-lumen flashlight. I've raised four teenagers, and I've learned that just because someone's sneaking in your window at 2 a.m. doesn't mean you want to shoot them. That bright flashlight will immediately blind the invader and readily identify whether they are friend or foe. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
American investors lost $3.7 trillion of net worth in the fourth quarter of 2018. When your portfolio's value decreases right before or early in your retirement, it can have a crippling effect. It's called sequence of returns risk, and it's a risk you simply cannot afford. We're Sound Income Strategies, and we're on a mission to help hardworking Americans transform their hard-earned savings into steady, predictable retirement income. Call now for free, no-obligation information to help you get started on your way to steady, predictable retirement income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Let's transform that risk into income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Sound Income Strategies, powered by the Retirement Income Store.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. A Front Lines of Freedom salute to one of our show's sponsors, honor, and remember. Our nation must never forget those who paid the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms. This is the mission of Honor and Remember, a nonprofit based in Virginia with support from their national sponsor, Spartan Nash, the leading distributor to U.S. commissaries and fifth largest food distributor. Learn more about how you continue the mission at honorandremember.org. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. My uncle, my dad's brother, spent a full career as an FBI agent. I can still remember stories he told me about how he and fellow agents worked hard to keep America safe. It's clear that our nation does need a strong and honest national police force to keep crime and that kind of stuff under control. But do we still have one? I don't doubt that the majority of the worker bees, the on-the-ground FBI agents across our nation, are as solid and honest as ever. But it's really clear the highest level leadership is wildly corrupt. And this very negatively affects the security of our nation that we veterans fought to support. I'm not sure when this corruption began, but it certainly became very evident during the Obama years. The wildly obvious example was when the FBI director Comey announced that Mrs. Clinton's total violation of security of classified documents during her term as Secretary of State was a mistake, but no more than that. Hey, I'm a guy who was a war planner for 4 years. I know the laws about security of classified documents. If I had done only 1% of what she did, and using classified documents on an unsecure computer was quite significant, hey, I would still be in jail, correctly. Oh, and this announcement was immediately preceded by a long meeting between the Attorney General and former President Clinton, and no one thought that was suspicious? So yes, the entire Justice Department leadership is also not to be trusted. Maybe our new Attorney General can turn that around. Troops, if any of the senior officials in our government have any respect for the FBI leadership, they're nuts. And how does one secure our nation properly when one can't trust the law enforcement leaders? To look at the total political side, it's still too early to take away any clear lessons from the Trump era, except one. Whatever you do, never fire the FBI director. Yeah, as president, it's fully within your power to fire executive branch officers. But if the aftermath of the Comey firing is any indication, it risks backlash from FBI and Justice Department officials who will take umbrage and extraordinary steps in response. This is the upshot of the 60 Minutes interview with former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. The Comey firing was strong-armed and unsettling given the ongoing investigation of Russian interference, but what ensued was an embarrassing freakout by law enforcement officials entrusted with awesome powers. According to McCabe, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein brought up invoking the 25th Amendment. Now, here's how this amendment is supposed to work. The vice president takes power if he and the majority of the cabinet declare in writing to the Congress that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. This is intended for something like a presidential heart attack. The president can contest this in writing to the Senate and House if the VP and a majority of the cabinet still say he can't serve. Congress has 21 days to vote. If two-thirds of both chambers say he can't, the vice president remains the acting president. Anyone who believes that this was a remotely plausible or appropriate idea is nuts. First of all, President Trump obviously was perfectly capable of discharging his duties. He was just acting in a way alarming to McCabe and Rosenstein. McCabe also says Rosenstein twice discussed wearing a wire to record the president and wasn't joking. The FBI then opened, per McCabe, two probes into the president to determine if he was a Russian agent or had obstructed justice. Consider this lunacy. By provoking Trump with a memo justifying Comey's firing, Rosenstein participated in the scheme that the FBI considered a possible crime or the culmination of a Russian plot. Then Rosenstein turned around and appointed a special counsel, who he oversaw, to investigate the possible crime to which he was a party. It's also absurd that FBI officials considered the firing of Comey potential obstruction of the investigation that they were continuing and making more serious by making the president an explicit target. The comments that Trump made about Russia that McCabe and company found disturbing were hardly damning. In his cover letter over Rosenstein's memo, Trump mentioned that Comey had told him three times that he wasn't under investigation. Trump was frustrated that Comey wouldn't make it public. That doesn't make Trump a Russian agent. In his notorious Lester Holt interview, Trump said that he fired Comey because there wasn't anything to him in Russia. He didn't try to shut down the probe. Indeed, the president said he understood it would probably go longer now. What McCabe's version strongly suggests is that the FBI took it upon itself to be a check on the president of the United States. This is not its role, not in our system. If the president abuses his power, that's a matter for Congress to take up, not executive branch officials whose panic eclipsed their judgment. You can like President Trump or not, that's your call. But what McCabe and friends set out to do was criminal, and they should be tried for it. Indeed, it's treasonous. Someone needs to clean up the FBI. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom, and we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. I understand you're going to talk about mustaches today, Roland?
That's right, Colonel. Mustache March is here again, and many airmen are once again growing soup strainers in the tradition that started as a tribute to legendary fighter pilot Brigadier General Robin Olds. Olds was no less than one of the greatest fighter pilots in U.S. history. A triple ace who scored at least 17 victories in World War II. He also led possibly the most daring and successful air mission in Vietnam. He was beloved by his men and pushed for changes in how the U.S. conducts air warfare. Olds' father was an Army Air Corps captain who was aide to Army General Billy Mitchell, who is known as the father of the Air Force. Growing up, Olds heard his father and family friends discuss how air power could help avoid the stalemate and horrific trench warfare of World War I. Olds helped put their ideas into action when he entered World War II in 1944, shooting down his first five enemy planes and becoming an ace in his first two missions in the cockpit of a P-38 Lightning. He was promoted to major and given command of the 434th Fighter Squadron, all before he turned 23. Olds is credited with starting the tradition of Mustache March when he grew his bulletproof mustache in March 1965, inspiring others to follow his example. He did it as a gesture of defiance, and most everybody on base followed his example. Olds' airmen may have gotten a kick out of it, but former Air Force Chief of Staff General John McConnell did not. When Olds returned home, McConnell walked up to him, stuck a finger under his nose, and said, "Take it off." And that was that. But the legend didn't die. Airmen continued growing mustaches of varying degrees of regulation compliance. And when Olds was promoted to Brigadier General and named Commandant of the Cadets at the Air Force Academy in 1968, his new cadets gave him an appropriate welcome. When he first entered Mitchell Hall at the Academy, the cadets standing at attention were all wearing, you guessed it, fake mustaches. Olds then profanely challenged the cadets to beat Army in the next day's homecoming game and gave the whole group a quick one-finger salute. Over the years, people asked him why he did it, and he simply said, quote, "He was a fighter pilot. They better get used to it." So, folks, we have two more weeks left in March, and we can get those mustaches grown and continue the tradition of Mustache March. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the book American Cipher about Afghanistan and the deserter Bo Bergdahl. Then we'll discuss drones with Jeremy Latchaw. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for planks. Let's do 2 minutes each, then stand at ease.
As a leading distributor of grocery products to U.S. commissaries around the world, Spartan Nash is proud to work with DECA to provide a taste of home to our commissary patrons around the world.
From canned beans to instant oatmeal, the Freedom's Choice brand has all your favorite food items made exclusively for our nation's armed forces and families with the quality, value, and integrity you deserve. Learn more at SpartanNash.com.
Exercise is hard. So is maintaining a healthy diet. Of course, neither is half as hard as dying. Type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and stroke kill nearly a million people a year. But most of these deaths are preventable with regular activity, a healthier diet, and not smoking. Talk to your doctor about your risk for type 2 diabetes and heart disease. You can stop it starting right now. Get moving. Visit checkupamerica.org or call 1-800-DIABETES. A message from the American Diabetes Association.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Vice President Mike Pence will be in Nebraska today to tour flood-damaged areas. In a suburb west of Omaha, credit union manager Jason McIntyre works at just one of the hundreds of businesses that were flooded out.
We also house the city offices here, and we just pumped more water, another foot of water out this morning.
The historic floods in the Midwest have killed at least four people and done hundreds of millions of dollars in damage. McIntyre says they're just trying to get their office back into shape.
And we're working to get demolition done so we can get all this repaired, get the credit union go up and going again.
McIntyre was speaking there on KSMB News. Busy day for President Trump as the president will welcome the president of Brazil, and the two leaders will then hold a joint press conference in the Rose Garden. The president and first lady will also receive an update on the opioid crisis. You're listening to USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
Troops, welcome back to the nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome to the show author Michael Ames. Michael and Matt Farwell authored a book, American Cipher, Bo Bergdahl and the U.S. Tragedy in Afghanistan. Very interesting book. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
Michael, I know that you're a contributor to Newsweek and Harper's, and your work has appeared in The Atlantic and a lot of other publications, and you've worked as a newspaper reporter and magazine editor. So is that a fair, quick summary of your credentials, of your background?
Yes, and Matt Farwell and I both come at this story with a personal connection. Matt is a former Army infantryman. He fought with the 10th Mountain Division in eastern Afghanistan in the same areas where Bergdahl did, and I was working in newspapers and magazines out in Bergdahl's hometown in Idaho at the time of his capture.
Okay, so this is more than just two guys who are good authors and good journalists.
Yeah, as one of my friends from Idaho likes to tease me, I'm still doing local reporting.
Well, what politician said that all politics is local? Maybe that's
right.
Maybe that applies to that, too. Okay, that's cool. How did the two of you meet? How did you and Matt meet and decide to work together?
Well, we got connected when I was working on the story for Newsweek. He had worked previously on the story for Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone did the first big feature on Bergdahl in 2012 when he was still in captivity. by the magazine writer Michael Hastings, who's since passed away. Farwell was working with him and brought the story to his attention because he knew it, because he had fought in the same place. And he thought, how could anybody go walking off their base in such a terrible part of the world, such a dangerous place? And I don't remember exactly how we first connected or the exact date, but I learned that Matt had been working on it in 2012, was one of the first people on it. And then I did one of the next big investigations in 2015 for Newsweek about 8 months after Bergdahl returned.
Okay, so you suddenly found yourself teammates just by fate. That works.
Yeah, we had both been collecting sources on it, and we both had these personal connections to the story that helped us start really reaching out and talking to the people who knew the real story.
Interesting how those kind of connections happen in life, in all kinds of things. Okay, that's how it happened. I spent a lot of years as a Middle East war planner, and having read your book, I really agree with your guys' assessment on the geography, the culture, the politics of Afghanistan, and that's something that a lot of people don't have a clue of. We could talk about that probably for 2 or 3 hours, but we won't.
Thank you.
So let's start with Bo Bergdahl. Talk to us about who is this guy?
He was an eccentric kid who grew up in a quirky town. He was homeschooled. His parents were religious. They trained him to shoot guns when he was young because that's what you do when you live 8 miles outside town in Idaho. And he was a bit of a loner and had some trouble making connections with other kids his own age. But adults really took to him. They saw him as a sweet, good-natured guy. But his parents never thought he was going into the army. His parents thought maybe he would go be a missionary for their church. And before he went into the army, they even looked at trying to get him into a program with their church, in a seminary program in Uganda. But the spots were filled, and without telling them about it first, he went and signed up for the army, which was the second time that he volunteered for the armed forces, the first time being the Coast Guard.
Yeah, and he also volunteered French Foreign Legion, or tried to?
That's right, he did, and that's a pretty good insight into kind of how eccentric he was at the time. He was working at a gun range in Mississippi, and he was working with, he was mostly doing maintenance and stuff on the range, but he met a lot of SEALs and Delta Force guys, was totally taken with them, wanted to be like them, thought he had the stuff to get there quick, and he was a guy whose ideas got ahead of him and didn't really match reality. So he gets to France to join the French Foreign Legion and was suddenly confronted by the reality that everyone spoke French and he didn't, and he didn't know how to get around. And that gets at some of his mental stuff that was going on, which is a part of his story too, which is that he had what's diagnosed as a personality disorder, schizotypal personality disorder, which these people tend to have very elaborate fantasies and trouble making connections in the real world.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing Bo Bergdahl with author Michael Ames. I wouldn't say from what I read that he was a totally messed up kid. He had his act together to a certain degree and hadn't found reality in some others. Is that fair?
That's right. I mean, I think his Coast Guard experience is probably the best example there. He signs up for the Coast Guard, also without his parents' knowledge. He goes to boot camp, and a few weeks in, he has a major panic attack, anxiety breakdown. The Coast Guard diagnoses him with anxiety adjustment disorder, and they say he can't join the military again unless he gets a waiver, and he gets clearance from a psychologist. Well, 2 years later, the Army needed bodies. The Army lowered standards for recruitment, and when he went and rode his motorcycle down to Twin Falls to sign up and enlist, they let him in. They provided a simple waiver, and they let him in.
Well, you know, that is the history of our military. We set standards, and towards the end of World War II, we had lowered those standards. And at this point, that happens. That's not surprising, but it can have interesting consequences, can it?
It can, and I mean, he was a unique case. You know, most of their lower standards, and they start getting guys with criminal records or guys with lower IQs. He was none of those things. He was a smart kid who knew weapons very well, was in incredibly good physical condition, in the best shape of anyone in his platoon, but he had emotional and mental things that had not been treated or diagnosed that made him a very bad candidate for the job he ended up being given on the front lines.
Okay. So he got drafted. How'd that go?
Well, he went through boot camp just fine. He stuck out. He was a loner. He made a couple of friends, some guys who were also a little bit more low-key and on their own and into reading and a little bit more bookish like he was. But, you know, he didn't hang out and drink beer and watch football. He wasn't part of the crew. And some people even started to notice that there was something a little bit off about him. And by the time he gets to Afghanistan, there were already widespread rumors that there was something mentally off with him. One of his sergeants reported it up the chain of command, but was told to forget about it. And I think that was a failure of the chain of command to really react. I mean, it's understandable because, again, he was in good shape. He was fit. He knew his weapons. He slipped through the cracks.
To an extent, that happens a lot in life. Usually when that happens, there are no huge consequences. Have you found that to be true?
Sure. Unfortunately, in this case, there were catastrophic consequences for Bergdahl, for the Army, that are still with us today, but we'll get there.
we'll get there. We've got about a minute left in this segment. Once he got out of basic and advanced training, he got assigned to a unit. What unit? And when did he deploy?
He was in the 1st of the 501st Geronimo Battalion. Now, I'm not the military expert, so I forget which division he was in, but he was training at Fort Richardson in Alaska, and he was a late deployer because he got a staph infection. So when his platoon went over, he was held back for weeks, which only sort of exacerbated this loner quality to his service that was already developing.
Okay, well, I'm a combat veteran of the 1st of the 501st in Vietnam, so there's more to this than meets the eye. This is Colonel Danny Gillen on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do every day. Take a break and stay in the area. Michael and I will be right back.
Now is the time, and wherever you are is the place. The Citadel makes it easier to earn your degree by offering master's degrees, graduate certificates, and undergraduate degree completion programs that are entirely online. These programs are convenient for working professionals and those serving in the U.S. military, continuing the Citadel's legacy of academic excellence. Classes are held to the same high standards that consistently name the Citadel the number one master's-granting public college in the South. The Citadel, online, on your time. Visit citadel.edu/online.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com. at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
100 Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with author Michael Ames about the book American Cipher, Bo Bergdahl and the U.S. Tragedy in Afghanistan. We've covered Bo's background and going through training and be assigned to a unit. He's not in Afghanistan yet. Talk about the environment in Afghanistan.
My co-author, Matt Farwell, was fighting there, so he knew it quite well. It's austere. The place that they were set up was an OP that had very little in the way of creature comforts, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners could understand. And he, like I said, he was a late deployer. And as soon as he gets there, he starts seeing that things weren't what he expected. And his ideas and his ideals about what he thought he had signed up for came crashing down pretty hard on him. And that combined with his pre-existing anxiety disorder led him to this insane act.
Now, as I recollect, when he decided that he was going to take a walk, he sent all his stuff home.
He sent some of his stuff home. He left his weapons and gear neatly arranged on his cot, and he packed some the things he normally packed when he went out in the backcountry in Idaho. He packed his knives, a compass, some notebook scraps, and some meat from an MRE, and some water, and he went for it.
So this is, how long had he been in country when this occurred?
About 5 weeks.
Okay, so clearly he certainly knew his platoon, he knew the people he was with. Maybe he wasn't a fully accepted member yet, but he understood the circumstances enough to need to do something. Is that a fair statement?
Well, or he thought he understood the circumstances.
Yes, that's a better statement, yes.
Yeah, he perceived things. Some of those perceptions were accurate, but some of them were not. And certainly the perception that he needed to go do something this wild and obviously unlawful was well out of whack.
On the other hand, he should have been able to figure some of this out. But then again, this is Monday morning quarterbacking. We're not this confused young man in a combat zone. So what'd he do? Talk us through that.
So he made a plan. He took out cash. He bought a disguise, a headscarf, and a shalwar. And after midnight, after his last guard post, he knew where on the OP he could slip off without anyone noticing. And he did it. He went for it. And when he got to the top of the hill, some of the Afghan soldiers heard him, but they didn't have infrared goggles, so they couldn't see him. And then he just started walking, and he went 4 hours. And I mean, we get into the full detail of his thought process, and when he realized that he had made a mistake, realized that he was in too deep. And we get all these recollections from the interview that he did with the Army investigators.
Okay, so he suddenly realizes that, ooh, I made a mistake. We all have those moments, but usually they're not as complex and dangerous as he's in. What do you do then?
He decides that the only way that he's going to get out of it is if he brings some intelligence back to the base when he gets to the base he's going to. So he starts looking to follow tire treads and seeing if he can see some people doing things like hiding bombs or planting IEDs. He thinks to himself, well, that's what the badass military guys who were my heroes did back in World War II or in Vietnam, so that's what I'm going to do here. And needless to say, it didn't work. The sun comes up, he puts his disguise on, and somewhere close to noon, he hears some motorcycles, and it's the Taliban coming for him.
And they grabbed him, and he was a prisoner.
That's right. They grabbed him, they shut him around for 2 or 3 days, and they take him over the border to Pakistan. And that's when the story really becomes a story about how the system, how the chain of command works, and why so many of the stories that we understand and what soldiers on the ground were told at the time were, in fact, not the case.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom, and we're talking Afghanistan and Bo Bergdahl with author Michael Ames. Okay, Michael, we've got 3 or 4 minutes. Talk to us about the important parts here and the conclusions that you think makes sense here?
Well, I think what's important to know and what guys who fought with him came to learn, and some of them even figured out at the time, was that within days, there was a very good sense that Bergdahl had gone over the border, that he had been taken over the border, smuggled over the border by the Taliban to their safe havens in Pakistan. That was known at the highest levels of command, but soldiers on the ground were continuously told that they were going to search for Bergdahl even after the highest levels knew that he was no longer there. So U.S. generals, including Mike Flynn, used this disappearance of Bergdahl as a cover story and let the Army run aggressive raids, and commanders used Bergdahl as a tactic to get around the rules of engagement. And this was widely known at the time at higher levels of command, but not by the guys on the ground who were told that they were going to look for, or even in some cases, find and rescue Bergdahl, when, in fact, our sources tell us there was not a single rescue mission ever ordered.
Of course, you can't rescue somebody if you don't know where they are.
Precisely. Yeah.
Okay. Continue with the story.
Well, it's important that people understand and soldiers understand that they were not receiving the full knowledge of the people above them and of the military intelligence. By July 13th, there was a consensus in the American intelligence community that Bergdahl was in Pakistan. And yet we all are familiar with the story of the six soldiers who died looking for him, but those soldiers all died later in the summer, in August and September, long after the point by which the military and the intelligence community knew that he was in Pakistan. So in other words, they were told a false story, and they did their jobs, and they went out and looked for him, and those guys who died are obviously heroes in their own right. And the fact of the matter, though, is that when they were told they were looking for Bergdahl, that's not what they were actually being sent out to do. That was a cover story so that they could be sent to do other missions.
Okay, so he's a prisoner, and then there's finally an exchange to bring him back. We've got a couple of minutes. Talk to us about when he came back to the United States.
When he came back, as everyone remembers, it was a political firestorm. The five guys who were released, I think it's important here to note, to jump ahead to show Bergdahl's place in history. Those five Taliban officials are now part of a Taliban peace delegation that the Trump administration is currently in talks with in Doha. I think this should be front page news these days, but it's not. I think the negotiations to bring Bergdahl home really unlocked that whole peace process. And once he came home, as everyone remembers, political firestorm. It was largely regarded as a scandal. Obama's approval ratings hit an all-time low, and politics took over the case from there.
Of course, we're used to that in the United States.
Sure are.
And then he was promoted to sergeant and held around until there was a court-martial, and what happened then?
That's right. 3 years of legal proceedings on this, and the Army put incredible amounts of resources and money into this case. His preliminary hearing said could have been taken care of with a quick special court-martial. Instead, it was drawn out. Who knows how many millions of dollars? They wouldn't tell us. The Army wouldn't release that information. But there were upwards of 50 JAGs at one point on his prosecution team. That's more than three times as many as were assigned to the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed case. So it just goes to show how much politics in our country still exploits the military and perverts the process and really pushes and pulls people to do things regardless of the facts. The Army's internal investigations stuck to the facts, but the case kept proceeding and growing and escalating because of the political noise.
Michael, that's awesome. By the way, I teach American government political science. Politics, poly means many, ticks are blood-sucking insects. I think you found that to be the case there. Troops, we're going to give away a copy of this book at the end of the show. Michael, how can listeners buy it?
They can buy a copy at their local bookstore. They can buy it at Barnes & Noble or Amazon, anywhere they buy books. We discovered so much, Matt Farwell and I, through the research, and I hope that people pick up a copy and we can take them on this journey with us.
Michael, thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your efforts to help we Americans understand what happened. That's important that we know this. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Now it's time for our Stand Tall Troop Report. This is when we find an outstanding performance of duty and we get to honor this fine troop. Well, Staff Sergeant Joseph Leonard, who distinguished himself by gallantry in the Baka Valley, Afghanistan, from October to December 2001. As Sergeant Leonard targeted and destroyed an enemy bunker complex on the 5th of November 2001, his team was decisively engaged by a well-planned and executed counterattack by Taliban forces. With complete disregard for his own safety, and despite heavy incoming small arms and rocket fire, Leonard calmly remained exposed to coordinate close air support, with nearly all of his host nation forces fleeing in panic and Taliban forces closing in on his position. Sergeant Leonard instinctively and successfully directed numerous danger close air strikes to thwart the enemy's advances. Facing overwhelming odds, he mounted his horse and lethally engaged the enemy with his M4 rifle and M203 grenade launcher. Withdrawing by fire literally within feet of potentially fatal gunfire, he contacted a B-52 aircraft with pinpoint accuracy, targeted his previously occupied location, blew everything apart, thus breaking the Taliban's advance and turning certain defeat into victory. Leonard's valor and calm demeanor under intense enemy fire exemplify the highest standards of bravery in the face of the enemy. His personal actions on the battlefield were decisive and instrumental in the liberation of 6 northern Afghan provinces and prevented a major defeat of General Dostan's Northern Alliance forces. So stand tall, Sergeant Leonard. Front Lines of Freedom and all of our nation's patriots salute you. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour discussing drones with Jeremy Latchaw. Then we'll learn the wonderful things busy boards do. And, of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our Armed America report. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to run. Run a couple of miles. Then grab some protein and rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.
Fisher House is a huge part of the recovery for wounded, injured, and ill service members and veterans. They provide a comfortable, safe place for their families. It's not a hotel. These houses are located at military and VA medical centers all over the U.S. and around the world. They have a common kitchen, laundry facilities, a warm dining room, and an inviting living room, too. Help make a difference in the lives of military and veterans' families. Learn how you can help Fisher House today at fisherhouse.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump is welcoming the President of Brazil to the White House today, and a joint news conference is expected in the Rose Garden. Speaking inside the Oval Office today, though, President Trump says all options remain on the table regarding Venezuela.
The death and the destruction and the hunger. Hard to believe one of the wealthiest countries is now one of the poorest and most impoverished countries.
Iowa Senator Republican Joni Ernst will join Vice President Mike Pence in Nebraska to tour flood-damaged areas. At least 4 people are dead in Iowa and Nebraska from the historic Midwest floods. In Des Moines, Republican Governor Kim Reynolds praised Iowans for helping each other to cope with what's happening.
Iowa's like no other place. We adapt, we solve, and we excel in very difficult times. And there's no doubt in my mind that we'll recover as a state and Iowans will rebound stronger than ever.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
At Indeed, we understand that when it comes to hiring, it's important to have a large talent pool to choose from. But sometimes too many good options can be overwhelming. That's why Indeed doesn't just give you access to a large pool of job seekers. We also offer screener tools that let you instantly narrow down your search. Hone in on hiring with Indeed. Increase your visibility to great candidates with a free sponsored job upgrade on your first job posting at Indeed.com/promo. The sponsored job upgrade is a $50 sponsored job credit. Users are charged once the credit is spent or expires. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Copays, codes, coupons. Searching for savings on prescriptions is so complex, it's like you need a doctorate degree. Fortunately, CVS Pharmacy employs thousands who have one. Our pharmacists. Plus, we built a proprietary search tool to help them find you savings on prescriptions. You don't need to know all of that complicated stuff. You just need to know someone who does. your friendly doctor of pharmacy at your local CVS. Savings vary. Not all patients eligible for savings. Ask pharmacist for details.
A new poll finds the American people siding with the president. USA Radio Network's Robin Walensky has a story.
A new poll finds half of Americans believe President Trump the victim of a witch hunt. The new USA Today Suffolk University poll finds that trust in special counsel Robert Mueller has eroded, and half of Americans agree with President Trump's contention that he has been the victim of a witch hunt. Support for the House of Representatives to seriously consider impeaching the president has dropped since last October by 10 percentage points to 28%.
Older Americans are taking too many antibiotics. A new study by the CDC shows that doctors write enough antibiotic prescriptions each year for every older American to get at least one. Health experts say antibiotic overuse can create drug resistance. In fact, the CDC reports 2 million Americans get antibiotic-resistant infections each year, with 23,000 dying from them. You can always find us on Facebook at USA Radio. This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
A terrorist opened fire inside two mosques in New Zealand, killing at least 50 people with 12 more in critical condition. A lot of the mainstream media have been quick to blame President Trump for this. In fact, some are even saying that President Trump supports white supremacists or supports guys like this who commit these terrorist acts. Rachel Alexander is a reporter with The Stream, and she says the person who committed this horrific crime, he's not even a conservative.
They're trying to say that this killer is conservative or he was inspired by Donald Trump, but he's written a 74-page manifesto that's out there on the internet where he says his political views quite clearly, and he doesn't like Donald Trump. He said he doesn't support his policy, doesn't support him as a leader. He does support him, of course, with renewed white identity, he says, but as we all know, Trump is not a white supremacist. And then he goes on and talks about other things, says he's an eco-fascist and we need a green nationalism. He despises capitalism. He despises individualism. And he says he's not a conservative. He says he wants no part of it.
Alexander also says this terrorist claims to be influenced by a prominent conservative, but that person is a black conservative, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense since he's a white supremacist. Please remember you can check us out online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com. At the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-ah, the front.